Hey everyone, welcome back to TV Guys, where if it hasn't been your day, your week, your month, or even your year, too bad, suck it up, you're on your own. I'm Matt.
I'm Brian, and I'm pretty sure you used that same intro last time we talked about Friends.
And I'm Angie.
Why do you gotta, you know, Brian, not everyone has the memory you do, sir.
Also, this is the first time that Angie's been on without Trisha, so now you're officially one step ahead of her as far as guest appearances.
I don't think that's true. I think I've been on without her.
I have the stats.
Oh.
You guys were on together to rank Friends characters, and then you guys were on for The Office.
You just asked for the receipts, and he's like, here you go.
You better send me those receipts. I don't believe you.
Yeah.
Matt's got them.
They're not the receipts that you can, like, take a picture of for Fetch. And it's
different. On our Google Drive, we have the stat sheet that I make and update.
Fine, Brian. I guess I believe you.
What's a podcast without meticulous note-taking, Ange?
So true.
Well, today we get to talk about one of the best episodes. This is my favorite episode of Friends. Angie, is it your favorite episode of Friends?
Top three for sure. Honestly, I'd have to rewatch the entire body of work to really solidify. But let's be honest, I'm probably due for that anyway, you know, for like the 15th time. So maybe next time I'm on the show, I can tell you my real list. But
no, go ahead.
It's definitely top three.
We'll wait.
Top three.
You can go through it.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite, but it is within my top three. And actually, so I will be going through Friends. So for the past, since like February, I've been at work, like listening to Gilmore Girls and listening to a Gilmore Girls recap podcast as I went. And I'm almost done with that. And once I'm done with that, there's a good Friends rewatch podcast. So I'm going to be starting with Friends and watching the episode and listening to the podcast episode on that as I work soon.
Brian, what's your favorite Friends episode?
It was called the one with the embryos where they have the quiz show. Chandler and Joey versus Phoebe or Rachel and Monica.
That's a really good one. That's a great choice.
But with 10 episodes of the show, there's a lot of great iconic episodes that we could have done this episode about. So yep. If our listeners are like, hey, you should have done this episode. Well, we might later. Who knows?
Yes. One of the ones that Brian suggested was the one where no one's ready. But then Angie's like, I hate bottle episodes. And I'm like, well, I kind of like them. She's like, too bad.
They're less interesting to me, but I can appreciate them because obviously they have to keep it bottled within that set. And so it takes a little bit more work, but I don't know. I just tend to find them more interesting. But
well, when you do a podcast, every episode's a bottle episode. So the more you know. All right. Well, let's jump into it because obviously if you haven't seen these sorts of podcast episodes that we've done where we do like a deep dive, we obviously go through the episode scene by scene, moment by moment. So I mean, we're gonna spoil the whole episode of this 15 year old or 20 year old episode. So go watch it, do that, and watch it with us, and you can then be caught up and be like, oh yeah, I know all the things they're talking about. That way too, if we like misquote something or we say the wrong name of one of the cast members over and over, then you'll be like, no, you guys are wrong. I got this. I just saw it. So
I actually have an issue with the title right off the bat. It's the one where everybody finds out. Okay, Rachel and Joey already knew. I mean, technically Ross finds out at the very end of the tag, but it's basically the one where Phoebe finds out.
I think technically Monica and Chandler also already knew.
I think so. I mean, they have to be really dumb to not know. So yeah, but I mean, the one where it's basically the one where it came out that people knew.
Yes. Although, Ross does find out. You're right. He does find out in this episode. So yeah. Everyone, all six of them find out by the end of the episode. So it's a spoiler. That's what the title is.
Yeah.
Well, this episode was actually nominated for 3 Emmys. It didn't win any of them, but it was nominated for Emmys from Alexa Junge. I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name wrong, right or not, but she wrote the episode. And so she was nominated for the writing of this episode, which was well-deserved. I think the writing was really good. And then Michael Lembeck as director, the best director, it was nominated for that. And then also it did receive a nomination for Best Actress by Lisa Kudrow. And so she definitely deserves it because, I mean, like, you look at the six of the main in this episode, and, like, it's really between Chandler and Phoebe. They have the weight of it, and they really have to sell the awkward chemistry there. And without their great acting, sure, everyone else is good in it, but those two are the ones who carry it, and especially Lisa Kudrow and the way that she she's acting that really carries it over.
I'm going to throw something in there with that. I just watched it before we did this, and I noticed something that I had never noticed before, which is where when, I mean, this is moving ahead. Obviously, we're going to go back to the beginning, but the point where it's like Matthew Perry, Chandler and Phoebe are like, you know, like embracing, you know, like that awkward embrace, like, you know, there's a point where he doesn't know where to put his hand. And like, if you look at her face, you see she has that reaction of like, oh my gosh, is he going to put his hand on my chest? Like that, like slight panic, but then like, but I'm still in character, you know, like, and I'm like, that is such good acting that she had that split second real reaction that she would have. I think whether you are acting as her character or acting just as a human being, that would probably be your reaction in the situation. So she was great anyway.
Yeah. We'll get to that scene. Cause there's, it's a great scene, but, The precursor to all of this and the setup is, as you said, Rachel had found out either the episode or two before. She had found out recently. They really toyed with Joey knowing for a while. And there is some really good legwork that this season does of Joey knowing, but no one else knowing. And that was a lot of fun that they did. And so at the end of season four, when they come together for the first time of Chandler and Monica, and they have that huge surprise, Marta Kaufman, the co-creator and one of the executive producers, she talks about that moment and that when it happened, it was like 2 minutes of applause and like standing ovation. And people like were just so over the top and like, whoa, we have something with this coupling. Let's see what happens and let's play with it. Because it was originally supposed to be a kind of like a one night stand sort of thing and just a little bit of season five. But they're like, we're going to build some stories around this. And it just kept, they just kept enjoying what the characters were doing with this. And then they found some sincerity in it too. And so you get both sides of that in this episode.
I think that's good because, you know, for the second half of the show, you have Monica and Chandler as the stable couple. While, you know, Ross and Rachel are still dating other people, Phoebe and, I mean, Phoebe towards the end gets Mike, but it's like, while the other four are going from person to person, you still have that stable couple. I think you get that in a lot of shows, like, you know, New Girl had Schmidt and Cece. I think it's good to have that couple. They found that with Monica and Chandler.
Yeah, you need the people that are in different stages still, because that's the way it works in real life. Some get, you know, you have the ones that are married first, the other ones that are still, you know, in process in that direction, so.
Yeah, that's a great point, because that's really the epitome of Friends, is it's just your 20s with the group of friends that you have and growing from that young adult into actual adult. And that's the heart of the show. So absolutely.
Even like, in real life, when you and I became friends and that little group we had of us as youth leaders, I think Paul and Laura were that couple.
Yeah.
True. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Angie and I were off again, on again. And everyone's like, will they do it? Will they make it?
Yeah, right.
So, all right. Well, we'll start off right away. The scene, the show opens with that opening scene that, where they're in the apartment and they find out across the way that ugly naked guy is moving. And so this starts the B plot of this episode that's just boring as sin. The rest of the episode is great, but they're like, Ross can't be involved in this, so we got to give Ross something. So they give him a very small B plot that, like, it's really funny because that B plot ends up being very consequential for the rest of the show. Because, I mean, he's in that apartment for the rest of the five seasons.
Yeah.
But it is like, it's not super funny, but that's just where we started off.
Hard disagree. I disagree. Okay, so it's important that he moves. It's taking a thing that is, everybody goes through it, that's, you know, can be pretty mundane, and they made it entertaining. Like, okay, well, he has an obstacle. This isn't just, oh, I'm getting a new apartment. Oh, yay, it's across the way. It is, I have an obstacle. How am I going to overcome this? And maybe I'm getting ahead of me. I don't know.
How dare you?
But I love the part where, like, Phoebe and Rachel are distracting him. Mm-hmm. I think that that's really funny. Like, for something that is so not funny, they find ways to make it funny. So I don't really view it as, like, unnecessary. Like, I think it's good. And obviously it ends up being important that he's just across the way from them. So
Well, it also they kind of decided, you know, we've had five seasons of, hey, ugly naked guys doing X. And mm-hmm. they figured that joke's kind of played out. We need something new for Ross. Because like you said, there's no episode in the whole 10 seasons that any of the six are not in. So like you said, Ross has to be doing something. Ugly naked guy jokes are ending. We want to have him in the apartment across the street, kind of all work together. Like, I agree with Matt. The story itself is kind of boring, except for that one scene, like you were saying, when Rachel and Phoebe are jumping up and down excited, and any other show probably would have had him be like, okay, whatever. But of course he jumps up and down too. He's like, yeah.
Oh, it's such a great Ross moment. Yeah. Like, to me, that is just so his character. That's like, that's what David Schwimmer could do. He could just nail a moment in a way that you didn't see coming. That's mm-hmm. that's the epitome, I feel like, of his character.
Yeah, so that actually, to me, I put that in the plot A, because that is they're finding out about it. And even though he's not specifically sharing in the secret, he is overlapping into that plot A of, oh, mm-hmm. they just found out about this secret. But you're absolutely right about David Schwimmer, is that he's not given too much to do in this mm-hmm. episode, because the focus is really on Chandler and Phoebe, and he's got his own little thing going on. But this is the crux of David Schwimmer on Friends. He doesn't always have the most to do, but what he does do, he contributes something that's really unique. And his little yell, girly scream and mm-hmm. jump and yell is very much indicative of, like, I'm going to take a moment that probably isn't going to be that funny, and I'm going to make it funny. And yeah. give his best moment of the episode in that second scene. Mm-hmm. So going into that second scene, after the theme song and the credits, we get the Phoebe and Rachel are joining Ross as they're looking at this apartment, and they're all in there together. Ross, it goes off and is looking at either the bedroom or the bathroom as Phoebe and Rachel look across the way, and they see Chandler and Monica. And Phoebe at first tries to wave, thinking that they're going to see him and wave back. And nope, they're going to start going at it. And then she starts freaking out and gives that big line, my eyes, my eyes.
Monica and Chandler, did they not care that they were going at it in front of an open window facing, like, New York City? Didn't they know that Ross was looking at that apartment?
Hey, we don't come here to pick at the logic of this. We come here for the lines and the quotes and the silly Phoebe moments.
Oh, no. I think I thought that from the first time I ever watched this episode, thinking they know they have neighbors. They watch Ugly Naked Guy. It's not like mirrors reflect back, you know, like, or not mirrors, windows. And so, like, they know they're being seen. So that is always kind of an awkward moment for me.
There's also a scene, like, way later, I think, like, season, like, when, probably after they're married, where the joke is, like, Chandler wants to have sex on the balcony and Monica's like, no, we're not going to. I'm thinking, this is basically the same difference as if you were.
True.
And this is why shows have show Bibles, is because of stuff like that, where they're like, oh, wait, we've already done this joke, or wait, we can't do that because we said this a long time ago. So they
We'll get to it later, but we could have used a show Bible because they doubled up on a big moment that already happened.
I thought that was the case. I couldn't remember for sure, but I was going to bring it up then. And I knew that you would know.
Yeah.
Because I know.
We'll get to it. I knew that both happened. I wasn't sure which one came first.
Yeah.
So, oh, I think I know what you're talking about.
Look at that. Yeah. We're being so ambiguous, all these spoilers.
Oh, I know, right?
But anyway, that moment, like, after Phoebe finds out and is freaking out, then we do have the very, like, the biggest role that Rachel honestly has in this episode. And so Rachel, it has her role in this of trying to walk Phoebe through it and try to be like, no, this is, like, Rachel doesn't have too much in this episode either. She's kind of like in that group, of course, with Joey and Phoebe mm-hmm. and Rachel. But it's really like the contextualization of their relationship for Phoebe. That is more about her reaction than it is about Rachel's reaction. Because we've already had the episode with Rachel's reaction.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting though, like, Phoebe's, like, advisory council are probably the two best people who know about dating, Rachel and Joey.
Yeah, absolutely.
Except Joey doesn't want any of this. Joey just wants to tell everybody and get rid of drama, which is a funny dynamic.
Yeah, and that's a great dynamic. That's why I think Matt LeBlanc has a good agency in this episode, because he's just ready for it to be done and get through it and get to the other side and like, he's just, however we can move this process along, and then, like, the begrudging, like, they know.
Well, to me, honestly, the biggest thing that I really notice in this episode is how great the writing is in terms of, like, they're able to stay so true to their characters because the way that they respond to everything is so in line. Like, most things that are forced, it's like, it seems a little bit out of character in other shows, or, but this show, it doesn't do that. It's like, they're always able to find, like, their center of, like, how would their character respond to this? How would Chandler respond to this? He's going to be awkward. He's going to try to pretend that he is, you know, confident when he's not. Phoebe's gonna have a lot of fun with it. I mean, obviously, I think that she was the inspiration of the show, aside from just, oh, she's the one that's finding out. How would she do this? You know, she would make it more fun because that's just who her character is. She's kind of extra. And I think that every single person in this episode, they stay very true to their characters and their quirks, and it just somehow works all together in a very believable way.
I think so too. Phoebe is the one who, like, said she's the one who's extra. She's the one who would like to, you know, play things up and not just be like she's in control of the situation is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. And I think that when they were writing this too, my guess would be like when they're maybe storyboarding it and they were like, well, which of the females would have, which of the two would have like the worst chemistry with Chandler? Because I feel like that was half of it. And we'll get to that more like as we get to their game of nervous chicken, so to speak, is that you don't see that sort of relationship in too many sitcoms where it's like the opposite of sexual chemistry while also faking that you're trying to have chemistry with the other person.
Yeah, because neither of them want it, but they both know it. It's just like a big standoff. Like, who's going to admit it first?
Well, and I think that you're kind of seeing what you expect Chandler to have with all the women. Because up to this point, before Monica, that was kind of his shtick, right? Like, he doesn't have that je ne sais quoi. He doesn't have that chemistry with women. He's bad with women. He's the opposite of Joey. And finally, he found his... What is that word? He finds his match...
Yeah,
and you're like, wow, that just works. It feels so natural. So then it's kind of like you're seeing back to like old Chandler of how awkward he is and just how perfect Monica is for him.
Yeah.
So at the end of that scene, we talked about Ross's reaction, the great jump and scream, moves on to the next scene where Phoebe, Rachel, and Joey are talking in the coffee shop. Phoebe, again, is getting a little bit more of the information about Rachel, about how it's been a couple, you know, months or weeks or whatever the timeline is. And then Joey comes in and does it, and like, Rachel's like, it's all right, Phoebe knows about those two. And Joey's like, what, how they're just friends, nothing more, and gives her a look. And then it spills the beans and like, oh, okay, good. Joey's like, now we can tell. Enough of us know we can say something. And they're like, or we can have fun with this.
Yeah.
So that's where they hatch that scheme. They're going to do something new as Chandler walks in and Phoebe sees her moment and says, I'm going to do my own version of fun. And she goes up and starts flirting with them, does the whole, ooh, your bicep is so big today. And Chandler's like, what's going on here?
Yeah. Because you can tell not only is this, you know, his friend who's never shown any interest in him before, but also it's not like Joey where I feel like Joey probably gets more interest from women in general, whereas Chandler probably doesn't get this.
Yes. Yeah. And of course, like, so when she's first like hinting at it, he's just oblivious because no one would do that to him. These are his friends. They're like sisters to him. And as we said, there's not that chemistry there. So he's trying to get to the bottom of it. And then as Phoebe's hitting on him more and more, he's like, there's that realization of what she's hinting at. And then she's like, oh, there you go. Now you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But then that leads into that next scene where Chandler and Monica are together in bed. And, you know, she's like flirting with him and saying nice things like, well, that's a popular sentiment today because Phoebe was hitting on me earlier. And Monica won't believe it because she knows how Phoebe views Chandler. Mm-hmm. And so there.
The scene was like, it's not possible. Ow.
Which is so true, like, to his character. It really is.
I mean, that's such a good dynamic. Because, I mean, like, Angie would... I could see Angie saying something that like that to me.
Yeah.
where it's like, you know, she finds me attractive and everything, but she also knows the women that wouldn't find me attractive. And if I'm like, hey, this girl's flirting on me, she's like, oh, there's no way.
Yeah.
True story.
All right. So then after that scene and they get to the bottom of that, then we get to see it in action because Chandler and Monica are together and there's Rachel in the next room, or Rachel's there with them and Joey, and the Monica's like, oh, I have to go and do laundry. And so then Rachel calls a bluff. Is like, oh, no, here's all the laundry that you wouldn't mind doing this, would you? And they come up with, oh, well, you know, I don't know if we have enough quarters. And Phoebe, ready to go, pulls out like this Monopoly bag of quarters. Like, might as well have like a dollar sign on the outside of her.
To me, that's the biggest moment. It's actually one of the biggest moments in, I would say, all of the seasons, that they just pull out something unrealistic purely for comedy's sake, because obviously if this is a real scenario and somebody does something like that, you're like, wait, what? Like, you're not thinking that that's serious. You know that it's a joke, and then it would end there pretty much, but they just like obviously bypass that, and it's just funny. They just let it be funny even though it's not realistic, but it's so great in it, because you don't expect it.
And it should have been more of a red flag. They were just kind of annoyed, like, oh, great, we get to do laundry. Which, okay, I watched it on HBO Max, and I recognized, because I used to watch it on the DVDs, there's a scene that got cut out of HBO Max where Chandler's like, we get to do laundry, all night laundry, like all sarcastic and annoyed. That line is cut out of HBO Max.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
They need to save those 5 seconds.
It's really inappropriate. Talking about doing laundry all night and being sarcastic about it, that's going to offend some people.
I know. But, like, normally you wouldn't – well, first of all, if someone says, I'm going to do laundry, my laundry, it's kind of rude to say, hey, here's all of my laundry too. And then who has a bag of quarters laying around? Like I said, it is kind of like cartoon logic, but we kind of have to just let it – like you're saying, we have to just let it go.
There's also the side of it too where Monica's like, I need to do some laundry. Chandler, you want to join me? Like, in what world is Monica, the OCD clean one, going to ask Chandler to assist her in doing laundry, especially if they're like they're being platonic and there could be like undergarments and stuff in
and
there.
Nobody else is invited.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Obviously Rachel and Joey already knew. They already knew that they knew. But just, or no, they don't know that Rachel
knows. They didn't know Rachel knew.
So really, they're just gambling that Rachel and Phoebe are just, oh, I don't think anything's weird with this.
And Joey, I don't think, is even in that scene. I think it was just those two. And then Ross comes in. So there was the unrealistic side of it. And then Ross comes in and brings it back to a more realistic side of how would Ross try and get this apartment? Because he comes in, he's like, I know it's a little unethical, but I sent him a nice little gift basket.
Oh, no, Joey is in the scene. Because then, you know, Ross talking about the mini muffins. And then Joey's like, your work makes me sad.
No, that's Chandler.
That's Chandler, yeah.
Oh, it is? Because, I mean, that's a Chandler line. That's a great Chandler line.
Yeah.
I think I've used that, like, oh, that makes me sad. But
okay, and more props to David Schwimmer. How he says, it was the best day. Like, pathetic.
Just reinforces, like, sometimes Rossi is such a nerd and such a bit of a dork. They're like, yeah, of course, a little thing of mini muffins would make his entire day.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. and so, of course, they go to look over and see, hey, how did Ugly Naked Guy respond to this? And they're like, oh, well, he doesn't say it was the mini muffins. They go look out the window. It's like, oh, what did you send him? Was it that arcade machine? Like, that's what Ross would see. He's like, no. Was it that giant big basket? No, it was the little basket of mini muffins. Oh, which one? There's a bunch of these baskets of mini muffins. The small one. And so...
Oh, that's $12. I'll never get back.
Exactly.
Or I'll never see you again or something like that.
And so that, going back to the realism of it, like that is absolutely a Ross would think that was such an upper handed thing to do. And like, I've got the edge back.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Underhand.
No. I don't know. He's giving himself the upper hand.
I combined two metaphors together and I don't even know what I'm trying to say. But I found it back of like, that's what he was doing to try and get the edge is, oh, yeah, this $12 mini muffin basket, that's going to do it.
Which, man, inflation is really saying you only paid $12 for a basket of mini muffins delivered to somebody's door in New York. That's pretty good.
Today, you could get like two mini muffins for $12.
It also goes to show at different times. You see how Ross has been frugal and strict with his money. Like, of course, everyone else was like, okay, $12 loss on that. He's like, oh, $12.
Yeah. That's how we can afford that nice apartment.
Yeah.
So the scene actually continues on. It does stay on that scene because Ross leaves out the 12. Oh, I'll never see that $12 again. Closes the door. And then Phoebe and Rachel are, oh, we better go get to see that movie. And Phoebe on the way out does the, well, I hope I'll see you again. Or like, I'll be thinking of you in the meantime. Something like that. Squeezes his butt on the way out. And Chandler just does that like jaw drop. And Monica actually gets to witness it this time. He's like, did you see that? She's like, actually, I did. And they realize, no, this isn't real. Or by they, I mean Monica.
Yeah.
She's like, this isn't real. She clearly knows what's going on. So they decide that they're going to take things under their own hands and they're going to twist it back.
Well, it's a great line from Matthew Perry as Chandler when he's like, but what about my pinchable butt and my bicep? She knows.
And again, Matthew Perry's delivery is like, that's the way to deliver that line. Really, really well done.
Yeah.
So then they decide that they are going to talk to Joey because, like, how would they know? Joey must have told them. So the next scene, they come to Joey's apartment and they confront him. I'm like, how did they know? Or how did Phoebe find out? And Joey's like, I promise I didn't tell them, Phoebe and Joey.
Yeah,
he's such like a 5-year-old, like getting caught in a lie. He doesn't know how to wiggle his way out of it.
And then again, he tries. Well, we can tell everybody that we know.
Exactly. And then it is the other side of it. And so Marta Kaufman, the co-creator again, she had talked about this episode and she was talking about, it was like, we wanted to give you the twists, like not really twist, but it's like the back and forth ping pong game without it getting too confusing. And I think the amount of times they did that, oh, they know that we know and that sort of thing, that they nailed that amount, that the rule of threes was the best side of it, because you get any further than that, it does get confusing. And they're like, no, we're gonna sell it in the third one. That's gonna be where we're at. So the second one is the messers become the messies, and they decide that they are gonna toy back with Rachel and Phoebe and turn that back on their head.
Is this where Chandler calls Phoebe?
Yep. And so before we get that, we get one more visit back with Ross, where he's still looking out the window and like, oh, Ross, you're not going to get that apartment. And he's like, man, I like apartments are so hard to come by in New York. And so they're like, well, you should have a hobby in common with him. Like, you've watched him enough. You should know what he likes. And so that's what gives Ross the idea. And that'll be the next scene. But before that, that is when Chandler does call after Ross leaves. To flirt with Phoebe and turns it back on their head.
So which scene are we talking about? You just had two different scenes.
Well, I mean, it's the same scene. It starts with Ross.
Yeah.
So he's the, like, oh, that's going to give me back. But, you know, talking about, like, the, oh, well, he loves cats. Or don't bring up the cat. Like, hey, that cat never saw it coming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, again, that's why, to me, I'm like, well, there's the B plot. That does fit in there. But,
I mean, it moves it along.
It does.
Just, I mean, it needs to. So.
So that's when Phoebe call, or that's when Chandler calls. That's Phoebe and Joey and Rachel are sitting there, and Chandler is like, I thought about what you'd said, and like, I think we should go for it. And Phoebe gives a very completely off guard, like a nice little noise there. And so, because like she answers the phone, she's like, oh, hello, you, and she's being all sultry, and like, we should go for it. That was as close to a record scratch as you can get out of an actual person. And so, you know, the tables turn, the power dynamic turns, and she's sitting there on the phone as he's like, oh, why don't you come over and feel my bicep and maybe more? And she's just like, I'll have to get back to you on that, and then hangs up. And Chandler and Monica like, yeah, we got him. And so then she's freaking out to Rachel. And they're like, what do we do? He asked me to feel his bicep and more. And then they realize, wait a second.
They both turn
and look at Joey.
Whenever these realizations happen, Joey's always there.
Joey, Do they know that we know? No. Joey, they know.
Yeah.
Again, Joey caught in trouble. You described it really well. The same thing. It's like he's in trouble. He didn't do anything, but he's in the middle of this. It's just like,
is this when he suggests being a barbershop quartet going, we know, we know, we know?
I don't think so.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Really? But this is the line where they're like, oh, but they don't know that we know that they know. Joey, you won't say anything, right? Couldn't if I wanted to.
Yeah.
So after that, we have the resolution of Ross's B plot. He shows up, ugly naked guy, and he's like, I can't help but notice that you're in the nude. And he just starts doing the slow clap for him. Yeah. And
I wish I was naked. Like,
you know, nowadays I feel like that would play very differently. People would expect different things.
That is, yes, that is true.
This is, it is how God intended it. Mm-hmm. Just how he was about it.
Also, it's one thing to be a nudist in your own apartment, even if you have the windows open, but you feel like you'd put something on to open the door.
Nope, not this guy. Hey, if he's dancing around naked in New York in front of a window and he's not at like the very top window, then, you know.
Well, then what does that say about Chandler and Monica?
I don't
they
know.
They don't open their door naked. No.
Everyone in New York, they just want to show off their bodies. Doesn't matter if it's good or not.
Yeah.
All right, so we jump back over. We see Chandler and Monica, they're kind of standing in the kitchen while Rachel and Phoebe are in the, I guess you can call it living room. It's a one bed, it's an apartment, so there's not a lot of space. But they're like, look at them, they're freaking out. And so they're both like, oh, the other person's going to cave. Phoebe comes back over and she's like, I want to take you up on that. I look forward to having sexual intercourse. And Chandler's like, wait a second, this wasn't supposed to get this far. So then, like, as Phoebe and then, like, he catches gaze with Monica before we move on, and they catch Ross in the act. But
yeah.
Oh, which, okay, can I just say about them realizing what Ross is doing? I never noticed this before either, but the first person to notice it was Ross was Rachel, who is the person that has been seeing him naked in the past. So what are they looking at first? They're not looking at faces first. And so I just thought that was a really funny realization.
Well, wasn't it that his face, we saw a shot from the window and his face was like obscured, wasn't it, or something? Also, you notice once they realize it's Ross, Monica is the only one who turns away because it's her brother.
Yeah.
Yes. True. And that reservoir just staring on.
Yeah.
Perverts. Everyone in New York. All right. Well, after that, then there's the commercial break. It comes back from the commercial break, and it's the crux of the episode. This next scene with everything that's going on is exactly what the whole episode was leading towards. And this is where the show earns its Emmy nominations. This is why it's my favorite episode, is this whole scene. Even after knowing what's coming, even after having watched it the umpteenth time, you still laugh because it's just so well done. And so it's, you know, Rachel and Monica, or not Monica, Rachel and Phoebe are preparing, jumps over to Chandler and Monica. They're preparing and they're both like, oh, I'm getting ready for it. And Monica's giving Chandler the pep talk and he's like, well, how far do I go? Like, she's going to quit before you do because you're on my team and my team doesn't, never my team
all, said my team always wins. At this?
At this, exactly.
See? They stay in character.
And that, like, that is exactly like the best thing that you could, I'm sure in the writing room, like, what, how does Monica treat all this? Obviously she's going to treat it like a competition because that's Monica. She's the best at everything.
That's the only way that you can do this without having Monica have to feel terrible about what's happening, you know, or insecure or something. Like, make it a competition. It is all fair game then.
Or should the audience look down on Monica too? Yeah. Because the audience could look down and like, oh, why is she being this way? But it's like, if she's thinking it's a competition and it's happening to her and she's like, I'm going to beat them at their own game. She absolutely would get
so
caught up in that.
So fitting for her character.
And Monica knows that neither Phoebe or Chandler are actually interested in anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So it works out.
So they show up, Phoebe comes in, and they're both giving their like, oh, I'm so excited for this to happen. No, I want this to happen. So do I. They pour the wine, and they both just look away, and they're just guzzling their wine like, God help me through this.
Which, can I say, they're the way that they are overacting with each other is so funny because obviously they themselves are great actors. Their actors are acting like their characters are acting.
Yeah.
And so awkward and so like unlike themselves, like where she's like, ooh, you know, like just like there's no way that Phoebe as a character herself would be like that in a normal situation. But she's overacting. He's overcompensating, like with confidence, like, you look good. You know, like Chandler does not talk like that. Like, let's be real. So they're overacting to each other, which is funny to see because you can tell they're both like Phoebe's having fun with it. Chandler's feeling really uncomfortable with it, which is so true to the plot and the origins of this whole competition, if you will. And I just find it really hilarious.
And it's like, you know, the Michael Scott bad improv sort of thing, but it's done in a different way. They're not doing an improv scene, but yeah. In a way, they are playing these characters in an improv scene,
yeah.
But that they're so bad at it. Mm-hmm. And so Chandler turns around after they drink the wine, like, let me put on some music. And so Phoebe's like, what can I do? Oh, maybe I'll dance for you. And director Michael Lembeck was saying, like, he wanted to let that moment play out. He really wanted to tap into Lisa Kudrow's natural lack of rhythm and to let that be a selling point. And so he really pushed her to just be herself and to not care if it looks good or sultry. In fact, it should look awkward and off-placed. And for Chandler and Matthew Perry's character to just really be like, yeah, I like this. And if you're watching it, you know, he points out, you can see he doesn't break, but Matthew Perry has that look on his face of like, this is him as the actor enjoying it.
Yeah.
It's awkward, like his facial expression. But can I say, it is one of the best moments in all of Friends when she does the whole like pounce stance, because that's what makes that whole scene. Yeah. Like, you ask anybody when they're like, oh, I love this episode, what is their favorite moment? It is that let me dance for you pounce, like the rawr type of stance that she has that is just hilarious. You don't see it coming and you're like, yes, that is amazing.
I think that made it into the theme song.
Her shoulders did.
Like, oh yeah, her shoulders. Yeah,
the shoulders did. Yeah.
But I will say though, they changed up what scenes were in the theme, like almost every episode.
Yeah.
So
I think they had two or three changes each season. As the season progressed, they would change it up a couple times. But yeah, so after the, you know, the sultry dance, then just like, okay, well, where would we go from here? And Chandler's like, well, should we take it to the bedroom? And she's just like, wait, really? And like, no, yeah. Do you not want to? No, I do. But first, maybe let me take all of my clothes off and you rub lotion on me.
Yeah.
Like, I would like to do that.
Yeah. It's like, I'll go get the lotion. And that's when they kind of regroup. Chandler goes to the bathroom with Monica and she goes in the hallway.
That's
and
it.
She's like, he wants to put lotion on me.
He went to go get lotion.
And even though the camera follows Chandler as he runs to the back to get the lotion, you see Lisa Kudrow's face, like she does like this roll the eyes, like, how am I getting out of this?
Yeah. Is that when Joey has her open her shirt?
Yeah. So she goes the hallway. Joey comes out and he's just like, what's going on? Like, are you guys not done yet? And then Rachel gives him. Rachel gives him his motivation. The sooner Phoebe breaks Chandler, the sooner this is all done. He's like, I like that. So he's like, he knows Chandler's weakness. Show him your bra. Chandler doesn't know how to work bras. He's too scared of them. Doesn't know how to work them. And so he does like the one little finger thing. And like she had the Velcro behind the scenes. She has the Velcro tied there or whatever. So he just like rips it open.
You are blowing my mind.
I know.
He just isn't that talented.
I know.
Wow.
Matt LeBlanc, you'd think of all the actors out there.
I know. All he has to do is look and it pops open.
That's it. So he opens that, jumps back to Monica and Chandler in the bathroom, and she gives him the lotion. And before he leaves, he's like, did you clean up in here? Of course.
See, they always make room for their little shticks, their own little OCD, like Joey wanting to sit in his chair. They just make a way to make it all happen.
Chandler comes back out, sees Phoebe at the door. She just closed it. Oh, you're leaving? Not without you, lover. And then she keeps looking down because her shirt's open and her bra's there. Yeah. She keeps looking down to direct his attention and nothing. And here's my bra.
And he's like, it's very, very nice. Is that when he's like, well, I'm very happy we're going to have all the sex.
I'm very bendy.
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna kiss you now. So then they're leaning in, and this is again like when you're writing an episode, you want to see it build and build and build. And I think this episode did such a good measured build that was like, it's leading to when are they going to break? It really is a game of sex chicken of like, who's going to stop first. And you're like, when are they going to call it quits? Cause we know they're going to, we know that they can't keep this up. And so they get to that kiss and they get closer and they're flirting and they're closer again. And then Chandler calls it for what it is. Well, I guess there's nothing left to do now but to kiss. And then they have like the most awkward, like brother sister type kiss for like 3 seconds. And then Chandler, I can't do this.
And why?
Everyone bursts in.
Yes. And he says, because I'm in love with Monica. And that.
You're what?
And that is the only acceptable reason for Monica to lose. That's what I love about that moment.
Well, here's the thing too, is that I think it kind of lose sight of it in the moment because you're like, oh, it broke and like, you know, Phoebe won and everything. But in that moment, it's like she's hearing for the first time, wow, you actually love her.
But is she not? Is that what you were talking about, Brian? Because didn't they say that earlier?
Is the Thanksgiving episode, remember Monica had a turkey on her head and Chandler's like, oh my God, I love you.
That's not what I mean. I mean, that's Phoebe finding out that, and she says herself, like, I thought you guys were just sleeping together. I didn't know that you loved each other, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's like, that's the big moment for, I think, them to realize, wow, they're like a real thing. And this isn't just temporary. But yes, you're right, Brian. They did say that I love you sooner. But I don't think that that was the point of that. I actually don't think that that's what they were trying to say. Like, it was the first time saying that. I think it was just the first time them hearing that as the friends.
Yeah, and I will agree with that. Like, I don't know if they were saying in the episode of like, oh, that was the first time. But it was the first time out loud to everyone.
Yeah,
that they knew how it. So it's like you can give a little bit of credit there, but you're right. When I was watching that, I'm like, wait, didn't they already do that? I couldn't remember the details, but I thought that they had a different first I love you.
Yeah.
Well, then they were awkward with each other, you know, like the what? I didn't say that. I didn't say that. Yes, you did. You love me. Anyway, so that was fun, but yeah, this is different. I feel like this is for the friends, like it's their establishing moment, if you will.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and so, of course, then Joey's so excited. Like, you know, everyone's excited. They're all like, oh, that's great that it's not just a fling. Like, you actually love each other. They're able to be happy for them. And then Joey's like, well, that's it. Everyone knows now. Well, Ross doesn't know. And so Chandler's
and if you
like,
could
– the look on Joey's face.
His face just drops. It's so funny.
Joey's face goes from happy to, like, mad. Like, it's it's not, like, disappointed. He's, like, actively mad. Like, are you kidding me?
Again, he's like a kid. This whole episode, and maybe it's come up because I'm a mom, I, like, really noticed. Like, he is such a kid for every, like, reaction to things. Like, not getting his way. Like, sick of having to keep secrets. It was just so funny.
Yeah.
Which, okay, minor tangent, off topic, but kind of. Okay, if you're going to have something a secret, you need to tell someone that it's supposed to be a secret. Because, like, I'm getting a rap as being a bad secret keeper because people keep telling me things and not telling me it's a secret. So, like, my girlfriend and I, we had planned to take her kids a few weeks ago to the Wilmer Rodeo. And we had planned on it. We never said, oh, we should surprise the kids with this. Then we were out to eat. And I'm like, yeah, I like the rodeo on Wednesday. And they're like, what? And like, oh, you ruined the surprise. I'm like, you never told me it was a surprise. I shouldn't get credit for ruining a secret that I didn't know was a secret.
This sounds like a personal thing, Brian.
It is, but it got triggered by this. It's like, you know, at least they're telling Joey, you have to keep this a secret.
True. Which, can I say, just overall, with how they handled Chandler and Monica, it was a far better storyline than the Ross and Rachel will they, won't they. They handled it like they saw that it was something more than what they thought, like Matt was saying earlier, like, wow, this couple actually works. Somehow they really work. And they went with it, but they like milked it. Like sometimes in television, movies or things like that, especially television, where you have these beloved characters and big moments of life, like they don't hit the moments that they ought to. Like, I feel like there's so many missed moments with like Michael Scott, where he's finally in love. You know, you don't get to see him married. Obviously he left the show, but you don't get to see him get married. You don't get to see him have kids. And like, And there's just missed moments. Like, even when Jim proposes to Pam at, you know, like, it's not a good story, you know, their proposal. So that's just an example of television stories where it's like, they don't make it worth its while, but they really make it worth its while in their relationship by doing an episode per person of the friends that find out. And yeah. I think that's so fun.
Even unpopular opinion. Like, I'm not against the Jim and Pam wedding episodes. I even will tear up a little bit because it's nice to, like, that Niagara Falls on the boat while everyone else is dancing down the aisle and seeing yeah. how they got actually married. But the fact that there was, like, they made it such a big conflict in it and it made so much fall apart.
They do too much.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They do too much with that episode mm-hmm. that, to me, I think it weakens their wedding a little bit, because I think you're right that is the couple we loved and we wanted to see all these good things for, and we wanted to see, like, a really good wedding episode. Yeah. And there is that element of it on the boat, but yeah. I think it could have been better if they would have been a little bit more like, let's maybe put on hold some of the yeah. caricatureness of
yeah, not layers. Everybody has to be a problem to them.
Yeah,
you know? I am glad, and they themselves were their own problem in that too. I mean, we're very tangenty here talking yeah, about so the it's office, okay. but
yeah, we talk about it all the time.
But I mean, but it just goes to show, like, that there are times in television where the writers just do such a good yeah. job, and this is beyond just this episode. But it says, okay, we're going to see what works, and they did it according to audience. Yeah. You know, participation in a way, you know,
I'm glad that on The Office, they were going to originally have Roy show up at the wedding and, like, try to win Pam back. I'm glad they scrapped that idea.
Yeah. Also, Marshall and Lily on How I Met Your Mother, that their, like, wedding that falls apart and they do it separately and everything. I'm like, that also, this is the couple that you liked on that show and the couple that stuck together after that first, like, bump they had in second season.
Yeah. Well, I find it frustrating, and I don't know if it's being a woman or maybe you guys feel this way too. I hate it when they're so concerned about making problems that they don't, like, let it be happy and let good moments happen. So, like, I feel like with Chandler and Monica's relationship, they were able to hit the right tones with everything. And so I think that's why they become a beloved couple, is because there are funny things. Like I said, everything stayed true to these characters, but because they spread things out and weren't like, we have to make it funny all in one episode that everybody finds out. Like, cause obviously they found out one by one, and you had an episode per thing. You got an episode with, you know, Monica's parents finding out.
Oh yeah.
And so it's like they really milked it, but in a way that didn't feel too long, and in a way that it was a good payoff, yeah. especially because you're waiting all of these seasons for Ross and Rachel to get their crap together. So they're kind of a nice payoff in the middle.
Well, let's look. I know we're supposed to talk about just this episode, but since we bring it up, and this is the couple we talk about hitting everything, let's look at their wedding. Their wedding, they did have conflict. They had, is Chandler running away? We can't find Chandler. They had, is Joey going to get away from his acting gig? Is he going to get out on time? And then they had the pregnancy thing, which wasn't a conflict. That was more like a mystery.
It was a setup.
Yeah. It was a setup too. Yeah. And so, like, between the we can't find Chandler and the Joey getting away in time, I didn't feel like it was overwhelming. Like,
there were shorter term conflicts in our reality, you know? Like, oh, well, we found Chandler. Okay. That one's done, you know, check off the list, you know, and then they could introduce a new one. But anyway, I don't know. We're probably going too far into other things, but yeah.
No, okay. It's our show. I say this every time we get off on tangents. Like, it's our show. We'll go where we want. Forget about it. All right. Well, speaking of going somewhere, this is the end of the episode. And so if I was telling someone else this, which I am because it's a podcast, in my opinion, I felt like Ross had two good moments in this show, or in this episode, and it was the scream and then the final line that he has. And so he's showing it from his old boss from the museum in this new apartment. I don't know why he brought him back, but it's a little bit of like that, hey, I'm getting my life together. And that rage thing, like, I don't know why getting your own apartment is like that. This is the solid thing. This shows how grown up I am. Mm-hmm. But of course, then he sees Monica and Chandler across the way.
Yeah.
And his big, get off of my sister! Like, screaming, and him in the background panicked.
Which, let's say, this might have been the moment where Ross never goes back to the museum.
Yeah.
He can maybe, you know, thank them for his career as a professor instead, because he just never was able to go back to the museum.
Yeah. I did look online, and I saw it like on a fan site, because I was looking, because Angie said that right before we started recording, like, is that when he gets fired and he never comes back? Does he ever go back to the museum? I'm like, I don't think he does. So I looked on there, and there was a fan site that did say that that got him fired. But again, it's a fan site. So, I mean, if you, well, anyone out there.
Well, season 6 is when he starts being the professor. So we can assume that he just didn't have a job.
And this is mid to late season 5. So we've got a couple episodes where they just don't talk about his job, and then he gets that professor. So I think that that fan site was right. That
I think so, too.
All right.
Weird plot point to sneak in like that.
See, and you say it's a like kind of a sad B plot. So much happened. It's a big episode for Ross, really.
It is. I'm just saying it's not like, oh, this is the funny part of that. No one watches this episode for the Ross dances with ugly naked guy arc.
Yeah.
Well, that's because you don't actually see it.
Well, that's true. If you saw it, then you would.
Then you'd remember it more.
Yeah. Would you want to?
Brian, I like how your default is to say yeah when you're about to jump in. It's like after just then if you saw that. The Ross thing, then you'd remember this episode. Yeah. Like, Brian, don't agree so quickly on that one.
He's actually sketched out what he thinks it looked like. So.
I know we only were talking about this episode and we got off on a little bit, but I just really wanted to go into the cold open of the next episode because they do like tie up this episode a little bit with the very beginning of next episode where Ross comes to the door and Sly's like, I know what you're doing in there. And like knocking on it, trying to get in. And Joey's like, dude, what's going on? And Chandler's like, I think Ross knows about me and Monica. And
Joey, he's right there.
He's standing right there.
Well, I love how like, you know, Ross bursts in, the chain's there. Like, oh my gosh. They like quick, like hide. And then Monica tries to open the door and be all casual. Hey, what's up, bro?
And then, of course, I also like Ross's reaction afterwards, where he's like, my best friend and my sister. And then Chandler's like, no, it's not just that. Like, I love her. He's like, my best friend and my sister. And then Chandler's face like, hey, look at you.
Oh, and then what is it? Rachel's like, well, you guys knew? And then he's mad. It's like, oh, we just cared about your feelings.
That's right.
You did. What is the lie?
You cared about my feelings. Oh no, like, your word hard react or something like that.
Yes, yeah. He completely. I love it. It's all about inflection, right?
And that, another David Schwimmer like change it from this probably isn't that great of a line, but he makes it funny.
Yeah, really good.
So I did wanted to visit that real quick, and I'm glad we did.
Oh yeah, it's kind of like a coda to this episode.
Yes. And so that's it. That's to me, the greatest episode of Friends. Really loved it. Lisa Kudrow is fantastic in it. Matthew Perry's really good. The rest of them are good too, but those two sell that awkward dynamic. And as I said before, I don't know if I hit on this point as well as I wanted to earlier, where like that you've seen people try and have in a comedic sense, trying to have that sort of chemistry. And like one of them is trying to have the charisma and the other one isn't having it. But I rarely, even especially before this, I've seen a little bit since then, but before this, I can't think of other scenes that were quite like that, where both characters didn't actually want to sleep together, but they felt compelled to act like they did and to have a dynamic that way. And I felt like that was a unique take that even now we still don't see too many examples of that, but we definitely didn't before this.
Well, you got to think about it like this too. Like I would say if you put people in a room and you watch them watch the show, there are very few shows where you're going to see so many like smirks and smiles throughout the episode. And this is chock full of them, even if you've seen it 15 times.
Yeah.
I was still laughing out loud. I was still smirking and I knew everything that was going to happen. So that is really the mark of a well-written and executed show.
And the Chandler Monica arc shows why if producers do this well and they listen to the audience feedback, why there is a place for shows filmed before a live audience. Because you don't get those sorts of live feedback, immediate feedback like that from focus groups, not in the same way. There's an energy that exists in a live studio recording that you can't replicate in a focus group. And you can't replicate, especially with Yes Men or people that are getting paid for that. It's a very different animal and Friends benefited from having that. And maybe that's a good thing to continue for Hollywood producers out there.
Well, and an example of that, just real quick here, like the show Blossom. Did you guys ever watch the show Blossom?
I've seen bits and pieces of it.
Okay, well, it has that Mayim Bialik, from
Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, Big Bang Theory. And so it was like when she's like a teenager and her older brother in it, I believe it's the older brother, is Joey Lawrence. Yeah. And his thing that he would always say is, whoa, you know, it was like this iconic whoa type of thing, but it wasn't written that way. And so when he just wrote it, when he just did it the way that it was written, it fell flat. And they're like, this show is not going to work. So basically, I think it was the actor that played the dad was like, just do what feels right. Like, you have to take a shot here. Just do whatever. And that's what came out. And the audience reacted. Yeah. I think that show exists because of the audience and their reaction to Joey Lawrence in that. So anyway, that was just an example that made me think of. But
Another one is, so I've listened to the Pod Meets World podcast about Boy Meets World. And Will Friedle mentioned in the episode, or in season one, where Carrie Russell played Feeny's granddaughter, or no, Feeny's niece. And what was the scene where Eric's outside, he just throws a bag of fertilizer. And he said that he kept doing it, and there's like just no response to the audience. And so on like the 10th or 15th, or after a bunch of takes, he said to add this like noise as he threw it. He said, like some sound like that. And that got a big laugh. And that's the take they used. And he kind of realized like that kind of gave him a rush. Like, oh my gosh, I want to get that audience reaction. And kind of like realized he could put his own spin on the character. And that was one of the first times he did that, was in that episode.
Man, you saying that though reminds me of like interviews I've heard with Matthew Perry where that he became addicted to that. And it's like, well, then there's the other side of the studio audience where it's like, I had to get that laugh. I just had to get that laugh. And I felt like if I didn't get it, I screwed everything up and I failed. And I'm like, you can, it's just a show, man. It's you'll be okay if you don't get the one. Well, that's
unfortunate. I mean, with anything, like there are the downsides to it if you become like addicted, you know, but I think that there's absolutely such a unique thing and an important thing to have a real audience to be able to help you do your job better, not only as a writer, because then you could just change things up, try things different ways. But then it's like you also have that feedback as an actor. I think it demands more of you. And so I'm in favor of the studio audience thing. I have a thing I always talk to Matt about. I'm like, one day we're going to have our own show. And so now we know. We need to have a live studio audience in order to have our own sitcom.
Yeah. Yep. Everything needs it. Breaking Bad, live studio audience. The Bear, live studio audience. Andor. There you go. All of them.
Yeah.
It'd be impressive.
Were you going to say something, Brian, before I cut you off?
I was just going to make a dumb joke. So you guys should just like put on plays in your living room and just hire me to come sit in your house.
That sounds as your really audience. Creepy, Brian.
It sounds creepy, but that is what TikTok is. So
yeah, pretty much.
True.
All right. And isn't creepy comments kind of my wheelhouse?
That's true. That's, man, you do it like a professional. You do it like it's your job, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again. Yes, I do. Thank you.
Just got to own it.
Jeez, Brian. All right. Well, that's our episode. Let's move into trivia. Again, if you haven't watched this episode, then I don't know why you listened to this episode. I would worry about your life choices if on a rewatch podcast you listen and you haven't watched that show before. You're like, this sounds good. I don't know what they're talking about, but I'm in for it. If that's you, I feel bad that if I just like insulted like one person, like I feel.
Well, actually, didn't Dan Rizdahl say he listened to our Arrested Development episode when he hadn't actually watched Arrested Development?
See, to me, that's different. Like the broad strokes of a show, I can see people listening to that, even if maybe they don't have the interest or haven't seen the show. But if we're like this specific episode rewatch and you're like, I've never seen it before, I'm going to listen to you guys. Also, I guess I appreciate you as a fan. I shouldn't alienate our fans. Like, go sit in the corner. Why are you doing this?
Awkward pause. All right.
Thanks, Ange. All right. Well, let's move into trivia after I've just alienated our whole fan base. Last week, we talked about 80s TV shows. And so one of the ones that we brought up was Eureka's Castle, even though we talked about it for only five
seconds. I watched that show.
See, look at that. Then you got to listen. You got to listen to that episode. And I talked about how Eureka's Castle was written, like the characters were developed by a famous children's author, and asked what children's author that was. Mm-hmm. The characters of Eureka's Castle came from the mind of R.L. Stein, the guy who wrote the Goosebumps series.
Creepy. I didn't know.
Well, you say that like he just got caught. I didn't know, I promise,
my
guys.
My mom would not approve, guys. I wasn't allowed to read
I
those.
I didn't
Goosebumps.
Know. All right. Well, our special guest, my lovely wife, has the trivia for this week. So, Angie, take it away.
Oh, guys, I didn't like phrase this out, but
too bad. What was that? You got to stick to it.
Okay. So, in the part of this episode that we just talked about, the one where everybody finds out, Phoebe, when she sees Chandler and Monica through the window, yells, "My eyes, my eyes." What is she referencing back to? Because it is from something else. Do you know what it is?
She's just saying the word mice.
I do. I know what it is.
Brian, you're so smart. Look at you.
I know.
How about you come next week with the answer?
You better. Okay. All right. Well,
I've been here for 143 of them, so I suppose I could do one more.
Well, guys, next week, we'll have another episode next week. We're recording these early, but next week we're Angie and I are in Disney World, so woo-hoo! Just be excited for us and proud. Woohoo! That's what we're saying right now while we're on these rides. We're woohoo! But we'll still record, or we'll still edit, or I'm sorry, we'll still upload an episode, so yeah. You'll have that.
And as far as you know, I won't be at Disney World.
Are you
a threat?
Are you Eric Matthews-ing us? Are you going to follow us down there?
I was definitely thinking about that reference, yes.
Look at that. It's like, it's really funny with that episode. It's like, how can we get any of the regular cast apart from these two in this episode? Eric would do it. Eric would follow them.
So true.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Special thanks to my wonderful wife, my favorite guest that we have on here, but I'm also pretty partial. So until next time, I'm Matt.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Angie.
And she just gave me a weird look. I don't know why, but she gave me a look. So there you go. Until next time, stay tuned and keep watching.